Well, today I'm bringing an episode that I've been really focused on trying to bring since I first thought about having this podcast. And we're going to talk about menopause. I'm introducing you today to a functional health practitioner who has her own practice and has spent many years focusing on helping women through these phases of perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. To feel better and feel better in their bodies and in their heads and understand their future in a way that feels like they're set up for just a little bit more sanity and success. Welcome to Surfing the Quick Thing. Have you been hearing me talk about the Clever Girl Organizing Challenge and wondering if 2026 is your year to join? Well, now's your chance to find out. Registration is now open through January 4th, 2026. We spend 11 weeks together, and I give you an assignment every week. We're going to work on all the spaces and categories in your home that are kind of causing some chaos. Your kitchen, paperwork, clothes, kids' toys, all the different spaces that really can get out of control, whether it's around clutter or your systems, and you just feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start. You're going to start with me. You'll be part of an 11-week program with weekly assignments, an exclusive supportive Facebook group community where I give you much more content on helping us understand and getting to the bottom of what you own, why you own it, and where you keep the keepers. I'm all about helping you understand the psychological and emotional barriers that have been getting in your way and helping you figure out ways to tackle that. Head over to clevergirlorganizing.com for you to find out more about the 2026 Clever Girl Organizing Challenge and sign up by January 4th. See you there. It would be impossible for me to have a podcast helping midlife women get unstuck without talking about one of the most major ways we get stuck. Most of us will go through, are going through, or have gone through menopause. It is kind of the biggest way that most of us will be impacted on a day-to-day basis. For years at this stage in our life. My guest today, Sarah Tugender, is the owner of Nutrition and Whole Health Solutions, which is a functional health practice outside of Boston. She spent most of her professional career working with thousands of women who were told their symptoms were perfectly normal and just part of getting older. And she's made it her mission to transform that narrative. She's passionate about science-backed, personalized approaches that cut through the noise of the trends, the fads, and the misinformation. And I was so excited to bring her on to help me with that and help you with that. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand, Sarah.
Well, thank you for having me, Kathy.
I approached you. I had seen you present at an event, and I realized that you were exposing me to lots of terms and concepts and things about menopause and about women's health that I really hadn't been exposed to before. And this is part of where I think we're in an amazing moment in society. I've said before, first of all, we're the first generation to have social media. Before, during, and after going through menopause. And I think we are in, as a result of that, kind of a moment where people are talking about it and wanting to learn, and people are sharing things in a way that really undoes some of the secrecy and taboo that maybe generations before us really held tightly on that. So when I reached out to you for kind of like a menopause 101, you said, absolutely, this is what I do. So I want to start there. Can we start with you explaining kind of what is menopause? What are the terms, the concepts that somebody needs to know, even if they're already through it right now?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. And I think one of the things, Kathy, you and I have talked about so much is just that I think it's this misnomer, and people take the whole words of like perimenopause and menopause and the change or whatever you end up calling it, right? And they mush them all together, midlife, and it's really hard to know because there's so many different things that affect us, and it's such a wide span of changes. But menopause itself is the day, it's one day, it is the day that you are 365 days without having a menstrual cycle. That's it. Then that's the day you're in menopause. That's your menopause birthday. Before that, you're perimenopause. And after that, you are postmenopause. So unless today is your 365-day birthday, you're not in menopause. You're either in perimenopause or you're postmenopausal.
You know, it's funny. I think about that in terms of when we first got our period, right? There was, I definitely haven't gotten my period yet. And then there's that day, and you're like, nope, I'm now menstruating. That's my
That's
phase.
it.
Yeah.
Right. And then
Yeah.
there's that one day that it's taken away from you, and then you're done. But I mean, the median age in the United States is around 51 years old. So you're going to have some friends that go through that, that day, sooner, and some friends that go through that a little bit later. But the onset of these perimenopausal symptoms that a lot of people end up talking about, because there's those perimenopausal symptoms that are, that is such a big concern for people, are the onset of these symptoms and trying to figure out, is this because my hormones are fluctuating? Is this because my body is changing? Or is this something else? That gets a little bit confusing. And then postmenopausally, with just that lack of estrogen, lack of progesterone, lack of testosterone, and our sex organs don't make no hormones, they just make way less hormones. So that's another misnomer where people think it's all shut down, it's all dried up. It's all, no, it's not. Like, you still have organs, you're still making some hormones, you're just not making it at the same levels. And so, for those, the onset of these perimenopausal, that transition, the average age again in America is anywhere from 45 to 47. But I mean, you can of course feel symptoms for some, if that's the average, some less, some more. And then menopause will somewhere, occur around that 45 and 55. For most women, that's more globally. And so you have to then know, like, what's my risk factor? I don't know if you guys are listening from somewhere, outside of the United States, but what is it where you are? What ethnicity are you? What background are you? What other kind of health history? And I used to say to people, Kathy, and I still do sometimes, which is like, do you know when your mom went through that? Do you know when your mom actually hit menopause? But I mean, I just think with our world in general right now, our toxic burden being differently, did you eat the way your mom ate? Did you have the same stress that your mom had? I mean, life, you're right. You're right on that. Your generation is such a different generation than the one that is your mom's. Your
Yeah.
mom didn't have social media. Your mom may or may not have worked. Your mom may or may not have had some of the same stressors that we have today.
I have to tell you about what I know about my mom and menopause. There are two conversations I've had in my life about my mother and when she entered menopause. The first was I'd come home from graduate school, and my father sat my sister and I down in the living room and said, "You should know your mother has started going through the change." I remember this.
What an awkward conversation.
The second conversation I had with my, and that was almost 30 years ago. The second conversation I had with my mother was yesterday. We were
Wow.
filling out paperwork. She was getting a bone density scan, and they asked, "What age did you go through menopause?" And she had to think about it, and she came up with an age, and that jived with my memory of it. That's it.
That's it.
Those 2 days in my life, have I had a conversation with my mother about her going through menopause?
I know. And we think that, because your mom must have watched Dr. Ruth on television, right? So, I mean, you really think that she was part of that, revolution of, like, we don't have to just call it down there anymore. We can actually call our anatomy by their proper names, and we can speak about it. And I know that was such a fantastic revolution for women to be able to feel so free to say, yeah, I mean, what's the difference between talking about my, vagina and what's happening in my sex organs, as opposed to saying, if your hand doesn't feel great, they're body parts at the end of the day.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I completely forgot about Dr. Ruth and what how that was absolutely a cultural revolution, I think, for generations ahead of it.
Yes, yes. But what a funny character to deliver the message to us too.
It's nobody's grandmother, right? It's so odd. So, the idea of the symptoms, like, so let's talk a little bit first about perimenopause. And one of the things that I have come to understand, and I think people watching and listening will say, is my symptoms may look nothing like anybody else's symptoms, and we're going through them differently. What's some of that laundry list?
Oh my gosh, so many different symptoms. And first of all, we have no idea. What is so also surprising is that 90% of women have never in any kind of formal education. There's nothing that sits down, right? We learn about the birds and the bees, and we get some kind of sex education at some point, but there is nothing that's informing us. Like 60% of women feel absolutely not informed at all. So that's more than half as to even what this is, or what, like, it for them to be able to describe things like symptoms. Because the other thing is that there are, as I'm going to say in a second, there's so many different symptoms, and the prevalence of different symptoms is all over the place. I mean, they did, do a study where, in women from 40 to 55, so that's a pretty big range, that, the prevalence of any symptoms is like right around 15% anyways. So you might have no symptoms. You might also have symptoms that sound like, is that because hormones are changing, or is it because just lifestyle-wise, I'm not where I need to be? So the biggest symptom actually being insomnia, affecting almost half of women in that time. But like you say, Kathy, we're in this, let's binge Netflix at 9 o'clock at night. Let's scroll social media right before I go to bed from my bed. Again, toxic burden is so high. I think people have no idea how to set their bedrooms up for a proper night's sleep. Like, they have no clue how to do that. So it's hard to really flesh out, is this hormones, or is this just your bedroom's too hot and I don't know how you're ever going to fall asleep and stay asleep? And
And I it's that's been a like that's a science for me now, right? Is when am I going to bed? Am I turning on the ceiling fan before I get to bed, or when I wake up at 2 to pee and I'm hot anyway? Okay, then I'm up for an hour. Can I sleep it? Like it is something I watch and I pay attention to, all of that. And I agree, right? Is it because I stayed up too late? If I'd gone to bed earlier, would I have slept through the night? Maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have. It feels like an experiment every night.
Yeah, it's really hard to know. And the science is now showing, Kathy, actually, that you have the best cognitive performance. It's not even necessarily about the time in bed or this, 7 to 8 hours that everyone just had this number, but really the consistency and the time that you wake up every day. So, I mean, you might just be someone who's just an early riser, but whatever it is, just making sure it's the same time and not having it be one morning you wake up at 6 and the next morning you sleep until 9 and then you're up at 7 and then it's 8:30. So if you can keep that window of waking up within about a half hour, you're actually going to have just a much better day in general.
That
So.
is that I mean that is new information to me and something really to think about, even if it means I have to wake up earlier in order to be consistent with those days I need to get up earlier.
Yes. And that's going to be a lot better for you. And I mean, there's so many different things we can hack. And another new science that's coming out is around, loading doses of creatine on those days when you feel sleep deprived and the cognitive performance support it can give. So those are just things. I mean, so I would think, let's go back to symptoms though, because most women are going to say hot flashes or night sweats, but that really only affects about a third of women. That's one of the signs for just a third of women. So there are so many other things. Again, there's like insomnia, fatigue. More than half of women will just say fatigue, but they're not putting that together with, again, a hormonal decline. They might just be, again, there's like this generation, the sandwich generation, that's taking care of their kids and taking care of parents. Why wouldn't you be fatigued? So that can seem a little confusing. Mood swings, any kind of anxiety, depression, insomnia. Then there's some odd ones too, things like frozen shoulder is actually a surprising symptom. Itchy scalp and ears is another one. The brain fog, something we see a lot in our office just because it correlates with some of the services that we have, is that joint pain from really the lack of estrogen. They're now finding on the work of providers such as like Dr. Vonda Wright that there are estrogen receptors in every joint in our body. So as our estrogen declines, we see a prevalence in joint pain. So trying to figure out, is it really that you just joined the pickleball league, or could it be a sign and symptom during perimenopause for you, or even postmenopausal when that declines?
So you've mentioned estrogen, and I want to make sure we, and you mentioned earlier it's estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone as the
Testosterone, yeah.
primaries. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in this phase that those three star in.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing is going to be in this phase, we're going to have a decline overall in all of them. So, that is going to be the first thing that you really have to understand, you have to look for. And so, when we look at what's going on in terms of, the estrogen's going to really help us with so many of the things with the joint pain, with the mood stability. Progesterone, we see that a lot of times with the sleep. That is the decline in progesterone is really linked to then the lack of sleep. So that's an easy button one that really, I mean, and I want to talk a little bit about the gap in healthcare at some point as well, but the progesterone is such an easy one that if you're going to start somewhere, I just think it makes such the biggest difference. And really, my philosophy is on the pillars of lifestyle medicine from the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And sleep is one of those big pillars. And we're really not able to recover. We're not able to repair. We're not able to get in rest and digest. Our nervous system can get all thrown off. And so something as simple as just a little bit of progesterone can make such a difference. And so let me answer the first question, then we'll go into the gap of healthcare. But the testosterone is most aligned with then symptoms of that vaginal dryness, lack of libido, really changing in terms of our strength and what we're able to do. And then the other thing about estrogen that he didn't say, because I guess I missed this symptom altogether, is just that increase of belly fat. That's one a lot of people also talk about. So when we have this change of ratios of the type of estrogen in our body, and we're not having, the estrogen that our sex organs are making, and we're now starting to get into just more of we're dominant in the type of estrogen, because guess what? Your fat actually does make hormones. Fat, your body fat is hormone producing. And so as we start to, it's a vicious cycle. As we gain a little bit more weight, we actually then are just in a different pro-inflammatory response. And we don't have, the other forms of estrogen to go ahead and combat that. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and I think this idea that there are multiple kinds of estrogen
Yeah,
is new information for me too. And I have to assume I'm not the only one who's listening who said that, right? But what I'm hearing is you've got that ratio of estrogen gets
Gets off.
kind
It's
of
just
gets
off. Yeah,
off,
because you just don't have that
and
anymore.
then that causes more belly fat, and that belly
Exactly.
fat causes more of the bad or the different estrogen, and
And
so
then
on
we're
and
not
so on.
sleeping and we're not
Right,
repairing and we have
right.
joint pain potentially. I mean, there's all these things that play into each other. We're stressed out, we have anxiety. There's a lot of different things if you have a myriad of symptoms. And the other thing too is if your listeners have not yet had that day, that celebratory day where they have hit menopause, then they might have a symptom one day or for 1 week, and then that symptom goes away and another symptom starts. So some of my best advice also is to pull out, whether it's the notes app on your phone or get yourself a journal and start writing this down. Because when we sit on our little, paper thin piece of paper on the GYN chair, and we go in to talk to our provider in our little gown that we hope we didn't sweat through, and we hope we didn't sneeze and pee on something, you know. And we're in there, and we've crinkled it and we've ripped it, and we're so sweaty and nervous. And they say to you, "How's everything going?" Like, you just want to say, "I'm fine. Everything's fine."
Okay.
And maybe everything's been fine the past 24 hours. Maybe it's been fine the past couple of days. But if you don't remember, "Oh yeah, I had that weird itch on my scalp," or "I had that weird thing where this joint hurt, but then it went away," there really isn't a lot of consistency during this time. It does not mean that you have to have a symptom for some magical number, 60 days for it to be a valid symptom, making up a day. I don't, whatever it is, that doesn't mean it has to be valid. But then, Kathy, we have the other challenge of we get into that room, we talk to this provider, and if they've been in medical school in the past 20 years, which some of them have, they got zero education around peri and postmenopausal symptoms and treatment courses. And a lot of this came out of the FDA putting black box warnings on.
What's a black box warning?
Means that there's a chance that is going to have a very bad effect to it. So, I mean, we think about these things. And so, this was particularly, they had said that there was an increased risk for heart disease, like, heart events, heart attacks. But when we look at the study that this went from, that this stemmed from, that got this black box warning on estrogen, it was because they gave women a different form of estrogen than we give women today. And they gave it the age of the woman that was getting estrogen. The average age was about 65, which is about 10 years after, when she would have probably hit menopause. And so that now we realize automatically puts her at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease, for having something like a heart attack, which we know cardiovascular disease still is the number one killer amongst men and women equally. And so the study was a little bit flawed. And now the science is coming out that that correlation does not make any sense. But when the black box warning went on estrogen, and of course, when we look at medical providers, they're trained to, there's a problem. We give a solution that's a pharmaceutical or surgical solution. That's what's in their toolbox. There's not really a whole lot else that's in their toolbox. They stopped then giving those doctors education. So there's a whole thing now where that just a couple months ago, late summer, there was a whole roundtable discussion with the FDA discussing this, saying this information is outdated. We need to remove this black box warning. We need to get back into the school system. But I've been talking to a lot of my clients just about if you're hearing this information or you're feeling dismissed from your provider, just ask your provider when they went to medical school and ask your provider how many courses they had around the topic of the menopause woman and just find out if they're informed. And if not, let's go talk to someone who is. Let's go talk to someone who's had that education.
It's what you're describing, and I think the study came out in like 2002 or
Yes,
something
yeah,
like that,
right
right?
around there.
So 23 years ago. So that's why you're saying if they went to medical school in the last 20 years, they probably didn't experience this. And it impacted practitioners who were practitioners then, right? Who had maybe had learned and then they heard, wait, no, hormone therapy, estrogen, bad idea. And so, similarly to talking about generations of women, right? So then we have not only do we have generations of medical practitioners who don't know anything about this, we have generations of women, boomers and et cetera, who were told, no, can't do that, causes cancer, causes cardiovascular risk, bad idea. So they also learned this. It's effectively misinformation, even though it wasn't necessarily intentional. They so we have a whole then a whole population of women whose mothers never knew this was an option, so they don't have that learning, generational learning around what options there exists.
Crazy. Yeah. And I do want to just bring up, because you said the word cancer. I
Oh
mean,
yeah,
there is
sorry.
still a little bit of a risk.
Okay.
It depends on what your health history, like what your family history is, your genetic history, where we do want to be, again, anything we're adding to the body, We're going to have like a word of caution with it. I'm not saying estrogen causes cancer, but if you already had an estrogenic cancer, you're going to want to talk to your provider who is knowledgeable, but you're also going to want to talk about just then how do I lower my cardiovascular risk factors despite these cancer risk factors. So they're just big conversations that
Yeah.
we need to
And
have.
thank you for clarifying that. And I can imagine what you're talking about in terms of estrogenic cancer already. Of course, you're
Yes.
not going to introduce more of that. Or if you have a family history that that's there.
Yeah.
And you know, the good news is you're probably not walking into CVS and getting off the shelf estrogen that you're just putting on without conversations with
No,
doctors and
not
without
at
health
this time.
professionals.
But I think now where the conversation has shifted
Yeah.
because there, you know, is an overall inflammation that happens. And of course, you know, when we look at weight gain and just obesity, that's going to increase your risk of all-cause morbidity overall, all of your risk factors and chances of dying. And so we're now in this stage of having another conversation of, and I know that's not necessarily the topic of this, but I think it's so relevant today of the peptides, the GLP-1s, your Ozempics, your Wegovys, your semaglutides. And I have to say that for the right person, like, and I've recommended to people, like, I think that's a great conversation that you need to have. But the other thing, Kathy, that's just starting to get a little funky is that we're now having paid Instagram influencers in this whole space of peptides and GLP-1s. And that is a very concerning conversation. So we're not at that with estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, but just buyer beware. Know where you're getting things from because it's now becoming a weird world where, you know, if our doctors aren't giving us what we want, we're somehow finding a way to get it anyways, and we're finding a way to distribute it. And it does not feel like it's the cleanest industry out there.
I totally get that. And I can see what you're describing, right? They'd say, oh, I want this solution for whatever reason. My doctor won't give it to me. My
Yes.
insurance won't approve it. I don't even want to talk to my doctor about it. If I can find a solution somewhere
Yeah.
else, I want to do that. And then you are kind of skipping over those thoughtful conversations and oversight from a medical practitioner who
Well,
knows your
that, but
situation.
also the distribution channels.
Yeah.
So that's really, I think, the biggest risk
Yeah.
factor, is because there isn't really so much FDA regulation around it. And I have this conversation with people, whether we talk about food, we talk about medication, we talk about supplementation. I will always say that anything that you put in or on your body, you better know where it's coming from, what's happening. I mean, and so we can talk as much as we want about, you know, eating organic foods, and, you know, then you have that person that then is going around using air fresheners, which we, you know are endocrine disruptors and toxic burdens and is going to affect our histamine levels. And, you know, so why would we not do this just because you get something from what you think is a pharmacy, or you don't know what their specifications are, and the FDA has not set those guidelines yet. But even for things that the FDA does set guidelines for, so I'm going to speak right to your audience that's with this topic, because I will tell you one of the dirtiest things that I see women of this age group put in their body almost every single day is their wine. And I am so sorry, Kathy, to bring this up, but
No,
that's another, if
yeah.
you go down that rabbit hole of, you know, what do they allow in wine? There's not really anything that they don't allow in wine. I mean, there's pesticides, there you'll find formaldehyde, you will find such high levels of toxins in wine, and people don't even think twice about it. And then they wonder, why am I waking up with a headache? Why do I feel so gross? Why can't I lose this weight? And it I don't think any alcohol has any benefit. I haven't read that study ever. So, but that's just an example of something that, you know, maybe started out as, okay, I'm not even going to think twice about this. And there's so many bad, dirty things that are affecting my health. Where now I'm seeing a similar thing with now things like peptides that people are getting, and they're getting them from pharmacies and they're getting them from places. And the ingredients that they're getting compounded with have no specification, and people are really getting, you know, ill from them. It doesn't say it's going to happen to everyone, but just buyer beware where you're getting
So
it from.
this is really helpful, and I what I really like about the wine conversation, not the wine conversation
Sorry, I'm
itself. No, no,
sorry.
no, 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 it's great. But it's that great reminder of, gee, I'm working really hard in other parts of my life to get healthy, but I have my eyes closed to other things where it doesn't even occur to me that there are health questions somewhere else. I'm
Yes.
someone who I was never a, I've never been a big drinker, but since I would say over the last year, if I have a glass of wine a month, that's about it. Because for me, it's been about impacting my sleep, right?
Oh
I don't
yeah.
sleep well,
Yeah,
right?
you
And
don't sleep
so
well.
if I'm trying to say, gee, my sleep hygiene is important to me, and yet when I have more than 2 glasses of wine, or if I had 2 glasses of wine 2 nights in a row, I have terrible sleep. Like I can tell, I can draw those connections. I don't need to know about how dirty it is to know that I just don't feel good.
Feel good. No, yeah, no, there. I mean, there's that, which I say, but don't try that. I think you make a great point is don't try so hard in one area and not just look at all the factors overall, which is that has to be the foundation. So before I have anyone go down that rabbit hole of let's go and test all these things and spend, so much money on testing and supplementation. No, let's start with the foundations. I need to know what is your bedroom thermostat set to? I need to know what are you doing around your sleep hygiene? I need to know how much water are you or aren't you drinking? How much movement are you getting in? Like you cannot out supplement, you cannot hormone replacement therapy, you cannot GLP-1 yourself out of those poor habits that set the foundation.
So I want to talk about your practice and how you're working with people. And the first thing I want to start with is, what is functional health? Because I know I've heard the term, but I genuinely could not define it if I tried. So I'm asking you to define it for me.
I think part of also telling you what functional health is telling you why it's different than what they're doing right now. So typically, when we look at health factors, is they just take overall risk. They'll take an entire population and then they'll say, Kathy, based on, your age, based on your ethnicity, we're going to put you up against and say, well, against everyone else. Well, you're not doing so bad. You might be like an A minus. You're in that range, and so we're good. That's a good score. You're doing great. And you're like, but I've looked around. I've looked at the other women my age. Like I don't just want to be better than them. Like, but what is it? But I'm still feeling like this. How do I get to being really great? And that's what functional health is, because your typical provider, when they pull labs, when you get those labs back from LabCorp or Quest, and they give you this range, and you're in a normal range. They don't tell you're in a functionally acceptable range. They don't tell you that your body is going to work best, most efficiently. So the levels keep dropping and dropping and dropping as to what is a normal range, because it's not based on any functionality. It's not saying, oh, well, we're finding, again, I'm going to make up an example as an analogy that makes it easy. We're finding that if you're at this level, you can run this fast, but if you're at this level, you can run this much faster. You understand that, right? Efficiency or, being really fantastic. No, they're just saying, oh, well, you're better than most, or you're right around where everyone else is. What? I mean, we're seeing this in fertility a lot, where they've just taken, what normal sperm count ranges are and normal sperm and saying, well, no one's really hitting that anymore. So we're just going to lower the bar of what we call normal. So my friends who specialize in fertility, they're like all up in arms about how they've just changed the bell curve that we're measuring people on. So we're seeing this overall in health. And we don't do that in functional medicine. We really look at what truly is the optimal range based on studies, whether it's to prevent, the onset of disease, to reverse disease that you might already have, to feel more optimal. It depends on what we're looking at. We're not just looking at surviving. We're looking at, well, for something, for instance, the level of vitamin D your provider might look at and say, well, if you're somewhere between 20 and 30, like you're in an optimal range of vitamin D. But the studies are showing specifically around, let's say, cancer prevention, we need to be up in the levels that are in the 60s. That's a functional range. So when we look at functional medicine, what is the function that we need this organ or this vitamin or this serum level, this number to do for us? From what perspective are we looking at it to provide that kind of function?
So the impression I'm getting is the word function is almost goal-based, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Well, what is it that you want out of your body that whatever's going on for you right now is not doing? And then let's analyze those to see, can we do something about that to get you to function in the way you're achieving
Yeah,
your goals?
exactly. And I think too, the how everything interplays. So we're very whole body when we look at it. So we're not going to just look at a number such as, I'll give you an example. I give, okay, your iron levels are low. All right, well, what other numbers do we have around that? Can we look at why are they low? Are they low because, well, I'm not consuming enough food that has iron or supplementing with iron? Or is it that maybe I am, but I'm not converting iron into a form that's actually usable? Maybe there's a little methylation that's called when you convert something over so you can use it. I'm not methylizing this, and therefore I would need to actually increase my digestive, function to be able to first, is it that I'm not breaking down the iron in my stomach, or am I then not being able to utilize the iron? And why don't I start, instead of just throwing more iron that I can't use, why don't I start with maybe some of those precursors to let's go there? So a doctor will just say, here's an extra iron supplement. And a functional provider might say, well, let's look at a couple other factors because maybe it's that you're not breaking down the iron or you're not converting the iron. And that's something we're going to need to look at.
So, and that gets back to what I said in the beginning, you're science-based and personalized, right, about approaches. So if somebody's working with, well, I don't want to say
Us.
someone, we'll say they're working with you or your organization, what does that process look like from beginning to kind of ramping on in that way?
I mean, the first thing is that I always just say beware because it will be the most in-depth health history and intake process that you've ever been through. Where actually, Kathy, this is going to blow people's minds. We actually ask you questions and listen to you, and then ask you follow-up questions based on the answer to that question. It's wild. It's a wild time.
Not just fill out the survey in advance and they say, thanks for filling out the survey, and you
Right.
never hear about it again, any of
No.
your answers.
They don't remember who you are and, really dig into things. I mean, we're going to go back, as far back as the beginning, and everything is relevant. And, or what they're doing in medicine now, Kathy, which is, Kathy, you came for this one complaint. Well, if you bring up anything else, I am so sorry. We're not going to be able to address that. You need to make a separate appointment, pay an additional copay, and we'll talk about that at the next appointment.
Yeah, I've
So
had that for sure.
that's not us. I'm like, tell me more. Tell me more about this thing that doesn't seem like it's related to that thing, but we might find a connection. So, it's a very in-depth, personalized health history, family history. We're going to do some non-invasive testing. We love assessments and quizzes because, as much as you can say what your symptoms are, what I think is really nice about it is that we will take them, chart them, graph them, quantify them. So as we continue to get better, people sometimes forget how bad they felt. So we will continue to measure and monitor. So it's not just based on do you remember if you feel better or not, but we have something quantifiable to be able to say, look at, you've moved the needle this much. But this is maybe still what we still need to prioritize or need to work on. So as we go, we continuously do progress checks with you. And then we're very honest. We can say good, better, best. I mean, do you want to spend more time with us, but maybe a little bit less of an investment? Do you want to just get things done where maybe you're like, I don't have all the time, so let's just test everything? I mean, it's really up to the particular person of how much time, effort, what they're willing to put into things. But I will tell you, Kathy, that everyone that comes to my office, we are nutrition and whatever else we're working on. So nutrition is always going to be the basis, the foundation, what the rest of your program is going to be built upon. It doesn't matter if you come to us for lymphatic health, you come to us for, musculoskeletal complaint with our soft wave therapy, or you come to us for functional nutrition. We will always talk about nutrition.
What is soft wave therapy?
Oh, that's a lot of fun. That's for people who really want to avoid surgery, don't want the cortisone injections, but are dealing with something usually around that degradation, whether maybe it's from an acute injury, a chronic injury, or just overall wear and tear, like an arthritis type of thing. All over the body, head to toe, we've worked on people. It's kind of fantastic.
Cool. You mentioned non-invasive tests.
Yeah.
That feels to me like you're not taking blood. Like,
Sometimes we do, though. We never do it
what's
in the
invasive
office.
versus non-invasive?
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be like blood work. So we always start you with the non-invasive stuff. So we're going to do things. One of my favorite things that we actually do is going to be testing your adaptability and your nervous system function. So for everyone who's watching this as a video, you can see I'm waving my hand around. I every single day wear my Oura ring. There's a lot of, users now of whether it's a watch band, a ring, some kind of wearable device. And one of the really cool data points, I get a lot of data points from my ring, but one of the cool things is called heart rate variability. And this is how is your blood pumping out of your body and how long it takes to return back to your body. And at times of higher stress, maybe I'm doing a workout. Maybe I'm just stressed out. Maybe, it's interesting to see where did I have higher, or lower levels of heart rate variability? Where was that variable? And then how do I bounce back the next day based on my overnight HRV? Well, we have another machine here in the office that will test HRV, heart rate variability. It's a strap that just goes right underneath, kind of like your bra strap area. And it puts it on a scale and metrics again for where your fitness is and where it should be, and how adaptable you are, and how is your nervous system functioning. And we've had a big conversation, I think, in the last couple of years around are you in fight, flight, or freeze? And we can really look at that as well, because a dysregulated nervous system will never really get to true healing. And that is something we have to start with. So we screen everyone for do you have a nervous system that's stuck or frozen, that we need to address that first before we even start trying to heal the body and heal some organs.
It's very comprehensive what you're describing.
I think, I mean,
And
I actually think it's pretty like, why wouldn't we all start there?
well, but no, but the concept of
Yeah,
you're
yes.
looking and talking and asking about just everything, and I love it starts with nutrition and
Got
the
to.
dysregulation nervous system. If you don't have that, you can't do much. So I want to talk about the okay, I came, you did some tests, we got some information. What are ways that somebody's coming out of working with you? What are they doing things differently? Are they taking things? Like what's the now what
Yeah,
that
yeah.
people find?
Yeah, and we're gonna meet people where they're at, but yes, a lot of people are going to change what they're eating. So that is, I will tell you. And I have three kids and one on the way, Kathy, at the moment. And one of my favorite things to do is to take my kids to the zoo, because I love talking about the diets of different animals. I love going and saying, what does the hippopotamus eat? And what do the gorillas eat? What does the lion eat? And I love to go. For your local audience, my tip is to go 30 minutes before the Stone Zoo closes, because all the animals know they get fed and they all come down and you can really see them, especially the ones that just get hot and in the shade all day. So my favorite time to go with the kids is at the end of the day. And really we talk about, because sometimes you get to see them getting fed. And I just think that whole concept of what we eat, and I think we're all so different, and we all need to have a diet. That doesn't mean we all need to be on a diet. This is not a restrictive thing. This is a my My blood type might be different than your blood type, Kathy. My ethnic background might be different than yours. My preferences, how my body likes to process things, or what my needs or risk factors are. And so we're not talking about things that are just a fad or things that are, well, I heard that this is good, or this is the newest trend, or we should be getting this, that, or the other thing. It's really such a bio individualized approach. I actually think it takes so much more pressure off of people. And when you're eating the foods that make you feel great, that are the right foods for you, you're going to lean into those and you're not going to want to go back because you won't believe how bad the other foods made you feel and how great you feel now. So, buyer beware, you come to me, you will eat differently, like whether you like it or not, but you'll really learn. And this will be something that will be a lifelong thing. We teach you those principles. We do love supplementation because the food system has changed so much. There's so you just it's no longer a luxury. It really is a necessity. And so we're working through those acute things first. And then there's those other things that we just need to talk about. Like, for instance, we're New Englanders. We will never be at the right latitude to be able to get the right degree of sunlight to convert to vitamin D. And that's such an important vitamin we're seeing overall. There is no one, here in the Boston area that I would tell them that they do not need vitamin D as just a baseline thing. So that's why, I mean, not one example, but you will probably learn what are sort of those foundational things? And then our clients who, really want to get into the nitty-gritty and are more into maybe longevity, prevention, just data-driven. It is a bit more of an investment, but then you can go ahead and invest in different labs than your insurance will cover. They're going to be functional. It might be a stool test. It might be something like a food sensitivity test. It might be a genetic testing, hormone testing. Lots of different options, and you sort of pick where you would want to make those investments and what you would want to look at for you.
It really it sounds like it invites a curious person who's saying, it's people probably come to you starting to feel like I just don't feel good or I'm struggling in some particular way. But the idea that many doors can be open, whether it's around again, kind of thinking about food differently, thinking about digestive health, thinking about the kind of inflammation, lots of ways to say, oh God, I didn't even know I was struggling with that because I was so focused on this thing that brought me in the first place.
Or if you have never been asked those questions by a provider, so you've never connected those dots, never even thought about that, that's not been on your radar. And Kathy, most of the clients that come here, unfortunately, have been bounced from provider to provider. Oh, well, in 2021, I saw someone acutely for this thing. And then I saw my doctor and we brought up some additional testing and they sent me to this specialist. And a lot of the times, overwhelmingly, they say, and I was fine. They said nothing was wrong. It was just normal. This was part of what was either age or my predisposition, or there was nothing that they really could do for me, or the alternatives weren't something I was going to want to look at. I don't want surgery. I don't want medications. The amount of people that go on medication, things like cholesterol medication, who are borderline maybe high cholesterol, but no one talks to them about what they eat every single day, what they're doing, how to do targeted supplementation. It's wild to me. So this whole I'm fine, that we just don't buy it. If you don't feel fine, we will listen to you.
I do hear that from women and friends all the time around. I know something's not right, but my doctor either doesn't have a good answer for me, or they said there's nothing I can really do for you, or there's nothing I can do for you that you're open to. And there's nothing
Yes.
wrong with not being open to, I don't want to be on a daily med, or I don't want surgery. There may be consequences to doing nothing, but for you to say, but there has to be another way, but my doctor doesn't know how to provide me with the other
And
way.
they literally don't. Like they maybe have never had a nutrition class. They've never had a class around women's hormones in this way. They've never had a conversation around supplements. They don't know anything about supplements, and they know a little bit. Like, I mean, I would hope your OB who's treating pregnant women at least knows a little bit about a prenatal vitamin, right? So there might be a little bit that they've learned about, but they don't know comprehensively or how to use herbs therapeutically, things like that, and unless they have an interest in it. So again, I think sometimes, I mean, Kathy, people will spend more time planning a vacation than they will really even picking out their doctor, thinking about their health. I mean, we will, if we had to do construction on our home, do you think, Kathy, that the same person that does fantastic back decks is also going to be great at master, bathrooms? Maybe not. Like, that might be a very different type of construction company that you look at. And so I think the same thing with our healthcare providers. There's no question in asking what's their philosophy, what's their background. My girlfriends who have curly hair love to go to hairdressers that specialize in the curly hair technique. So,
And we will research that, right? We will say,
yes.
like, wait, who works the best with the kind of hair I have and the kind of hair I
Right.
want?
But we expect our PCP to be the expert in whatever it is we want to talk to them about. So.
I love my doctor, my primary care physician, and I have been with her a long time. And I find that one of the things I love about how she's helped me manage my health issues is she's proactive and she's like, hey, how is this going? And I'm hearing from, she's about 10 years younger than me, I think. She's like, I'm hearing from my other clients or my other patients about your age, this. How are you doing with that? And I love that she has been brought up that she referred me to a nutritionist. She's the one who kind of said, are you familiar with the Mediterranean diet? Have you thought about this? So I feel like I'm very lucky that I have a trusted relationship. My doctor, she's not going to push me in an area I'm not comfortable with, but she is going to push me in an area that she thinks is important. She wants me to be open to. And I know that I'm very unique to be able to say all that about my doctor.
It's awesome. And when we find people like that, and again, that might be great for you, but our husbands or brothers, they're not going to the same PCP necessarily. So we all, like, just because something works for you doesn't mean it's great for the next person. Again, we all have individualized risk factors and what we need to think about. And I love doctors for, what we need to have them for. It's when either they put down an industry because they don't really know a lot about that. That gets really discouraging. I don't, that's not fair, I don't think. And or when, we get frustrated as consumers of healthcare to say, well, they should have known more about that. And I'll just go back to, like, if you have curly hair, go to a curly hair specialist. Don't expect just any hairdresser to be able to help you with that issue. For the same reason, if you're trying to find a functional whole body approach, if you're trying to do something that has a foundation of nutrition, and then we build on top of that, and we don't just put band-aids on solutions, but we actually fix things, you're probably not going to get that from your run-of-the-mill PCP.
I want to, we're going to pivot and we're going to talk about the quicksand three. But when we finish up with that, I want to talk about just what you just talked about. If you're interested in working with somebody with functional health, and more importantly, if they're interested in working with you, I want to come back and make sure people know how to work with you. And I think you have an offer to share with them. And so
I
I'm going to
do.
invite you to do that. So my quicksand three, the same three questions I ask all of my guests, is built with the foundation of helping midlife women get unstuck. First question is, what is a tip or trick that you use to get motivated to do something you've been avoiding?
Yeah, for me, it's the same thing I do with my kids. So a lot of times it's just that you, first of all, you have to start, and I don't always like to commit to something that I'm not sure that I don't want to do. So I do, and I love this. I have so many timers all over my house or a timer on my phone. I say, let's do this for 15 minutes. And if I feel inclined to do it longer than that, then I'll do it longer than that. And people will say that a lot, even about, like, working out. Just get through that first 15 minutes, put your shoes on, don't commit to a big walk, do a little walk. But anything, it's, you can do it for 15 minutes. And then I always find once I'm in motion, the momentum will just continue.
I love that. And I think the math is that there are about 100 15-minute windows a day.
Ooh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Second question, if time and history and skills and money and location were not an issue, What is a career or a job you think you might have liked to try?
Yeah, no, this I tell everyone. I want to be a group fitness instructor, but I am so nervous about remembering choreography because I think I'm a great dancer, but I'm not great in remembering a dance. So I would have to find some kind of non-choreographed. I can like look at a note card on the floor, but I grew up going to the Melrose YMCA and doing those step aerobics classes and the strength training classes in the studios, and I still do it today. It's my happy place, and I just would love a microphone and to be able to motivate people in that way.
I love it. I love it.
Someday.
And the third question is, what is a way when life gets chaotic that you recharge or hit the reset button?
Yeah, and this one's easy for me. And it's typically just lighting a candle. I have some really, really nice candles, and I find that next moment, whatever it is, and just that ceremony around, like I'm gonna take some time. I also feel like when you sit and you light like one of your favorite candles, and I do have some candles that I've made some investments in. My favorite brand has got to be the Jo Malone candle. You know, it's pretty expensive, and the scents are unbelievable. And you know, being able to do that, I think also stimulates just all of your different senses, right? So I love it also. I mean, I think that changes the light, the mooding. You then sometimes, if you sit close enough to it, can feel it. You can smell it, obviously. You can hear that little crackle, that really great ASMR. I mean, it just puts me in a whole different mood. And I tend that, okay, now I can go ahead and do the next thing.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And I don't think I've had anybody mention a candle on this yet. And you have me thinking about, I received a lovely candle for my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like looking at it. I haven't lit it. Just like, oh, I should do something about it. But I think you're inspiring me to light it later
Thank you.
and get a sense of it. This has been so much fun, but more importantly, I've learned a lot, and I appreciate you allowing me to ask what probably people would call dumb questions. I know you won't call them a dumb question, but sometimes we feel like I should know this. I'm in my 50s. I should know this. Why don't I know? So I appreciate you just meeting me and my kind of curiosity and intelligence level where it was and making me feel very comfortable.
Course. So thank you. Great questions. This is a fantastic dialogue.
Thank you. So let's get back to how can people work with you? And one of the things I want to make sure people know is you do work virtually. And so
We do
let's
too.
kind of,
Yeah. You can come see us in Stoneham, Massachusetts if you're locally, which I love still that we have a physical brick and mortar Main Street USA kind of practice, because I think that there is a dying breed at this stage. But if you came to us and you're not local, or for some reason that just doesn't make sense, yes, you can see us virtually. So we do take virtual clients as well. And I've had some clients, Kathy, that are like, well, but actually, about 2 months into care, I'm going to be within 2 hours of driving distance. So let me come in for some of those in-person tests that I can only do in person. So where there's a will, there's a way. But you'll come to our website where NWHSlife.com. So nutrition and whole health solutions. I'm sure you're going to have show notes. So I do
Absolutely.
love hanging out on Instagram, and you'll get me. I'm the community manager. It's me. So you'll get me answering your question if you have a question and you want to come in and ask that of me. But call the office. We have a text line as well. And can I tell them that I'm giving them all they have to say is, mention this podcast or Kathy's name, and you get $100 off of an initial consultation with us.
That is amazing, right? And you've said a few times, like, this is an investment, and
It
it's an
can be.
investment in a lot of ways. So the idea that you are giving such a generous discount to Surfing the Quicksand listeners and watchers, I'm so grateful. Thank you
Well,
so
if you've stuck
much.
with us this long, like,
Yes. Right.
good
You get the prize at
for
the finish
you.
line.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So they should mention Surfing the Quicksand or Kathy
Yes, or Kathy
Vines
Vines. Yep.
when they reach out about setting
Yes.
up a consultation.
Yes.
Good. Thank you so much, Sarah. I am so happy that we got this time. I would tell people that we've been talking for a while about getting this on the calendar, and I know your fourth baby is like on the way, and I'm so pleased you made this a priority
Thank
before
you.
you head out on maternity leave. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
Of course. And thank you, everyone, for sticking with us.
I meant it when I said to Sarah at the end that I really appreciated that she kind of entertained what I would consider kind of dumb questions or questions I should know the answer to, right? Or feel like it should just be out there. And some of that is the world not teaching me in a formal way. And some of it is just everybody's different and everybody's doing it at a different time and in a different way. And we kind of know. Learn from each other through sharing horror stories, right? And so I hope you got something out of today that feels a little bit more like, oh, kind of went to class, kind of learned some things, gotta put some context around my own experience or the experiences I've been hearing from other people about what they're going through. I hope that if you were intrigued by the concept of functional health, whether honestly, whether that's about menopause and women's health or any other aspect of your life and body, if you've been intrigued by that, whether you reach out to Sarah or you do some research on your own about what some options are for you, I hope today was educational and inspiring for you on that. Always love to hear your thoughts on this topic or anything else. Head over to quicksandpod.com and reach out to me on the contact form or comment wherever you've been watching this and let me know a little bit about how surfing quicksand can better help you get unstuck.